Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length, members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Dear Prudence. Dear Prudy. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to the show once again. And as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Daniel Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio this week is Sarah Schneider, a registered nurse and a dear friend of mine who lives in the Bay Area. It says here that her Go Fish game is on point. Sarah, thank you so much for taking a break from your busy card playing schedule.
Thank you so much for having me. You know how much nurses love to play cards.
I know. I mean, when I think of nurses, I think of really just hustlers, gamesters, game sharks.
Absolutely. Yeah, our hold'em games are brutal.
Pool playing and just ignoring any and all pages.
Oh, yeah. No, we never respond to call lights or beeps or anything.
No, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Unflappably focused on your card game.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically professional card players.
I'm so glad that you're here.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so sorry that people sometimes say dumb things about nurses.
It's fine. We're good at our jobs. She doesn't need to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I having heard many a tale from you about how your work is going and how periodically you're like, should I train to become a first responder? Because sometimes I have downtime and I feel like I could maybe be working in an ambulance when I'm not like already working.
I mean, I was having a day.
You were having a day.
I was having
a
day. Yeah.
I was very glad to be with you in that moment.
I was glad you were there too. Yeah. Your guidance was, as always, excellent.
I'm happy to help. I'm often happy to be able to give people advice of like, I think you can do less here. I got to do that a little bit today. I had a couple of people who were like, I think I need to intervene with a coworker.
And
often people do. But in this case,
they didn't have to.
No, they didn't have to.
They got to take the opportunity to not do anything.
It was one of those things where it's just like, you're just going to have to live with the possibility that somebody might be getting away with something.
Mm.
And sometimes, and I can certainly relate to this.
I really relate to not wanting to let somebody get away with something, but also...
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to just do nothing.
It's just going to happen
sometimes. It's just going to happen.
And it doesn't affect this person in any way.
Oh, good. Then they should definitely not do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an important gift to be able to give yourself every once in a while. But this first letter is not one where I can just say, just don't worry about it.
I know. I was fretting about this
or
one.
Or rather, the ways in which I think they can try to achieve greater distance is not going to be about just like, just relax. So
I know.
It's going to take some work. But
I know.
All right, so I'll read this one because it's no fun.
Okay, sounds great.
And plus, that means you get to read the next one, which is incredible.
They're all kind of incredible, but let's do this.
Incredible. All right, so first one is how to manage a gift from an estranged parent. Dear Prudence, I've been mostly estranged from my mother for almost 6 years. We last spoke on the phone in 2015, and our communication now is limited to emails and birthday cards. I try to keep her updated about big events in my life. This fall, I emailed to let her know that my father, the ex-husband she was married to for 30 years, had been diagnosed with terminal cancer and was expected to die in 3 to 6 months. She emailed me back to wish me well and to let her know if there was anything she could do. Prudy, this broke my heart. I always thought that if times got really tough, she would get over our conflict and behave like a mother. I felt abandoned during one of the worst moments of my life. I'm happy to report that 8 months after that email, my father is still alive and will probably have another year or so. But that was the last I heard from my mother until today when I received a mail order wine of the month delivery. I don't know what to do. I don't feel like I can accept a gift without acknowledging it and thanking the sender, but I also don't want to thank my mother for anything. I also don't want to ignore this, and I know that she'll be telling everyone what a terrible, ungrateful child I am. My third option is to email and say that I don't appreciate the gift and would like her not to do this sort of thing, which is likely to stir up interpersonal conflict that I'm not prepared to manage. I have a lot of stressors in my life right now, including career trouble, marital stress, infertility, and my dad's ongoing health issues. I'm really sorry.
I am too.
You know, I mean, I tried like running this through the like with the most generous to the mother filters on.
Oh, I didn't even try that. That's a really good thing.
I was just trying to think of like, is there a situation in which like the father in question like horribly cheated on her or was abusive to her in ways that the letter writer never saw, such that it would explain or justify her need for distance now?
Sure, but even then, like, she could have showed up for her daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, there are ways to show up for somebody when they're dealing with, like, an illness, like, a really serious illness of a family member that don't involve, like, showing up for that particular, for the person who's ill.
Yeah, and then I think between that and then the line about, if I don't say thank you for my wine of the month, she will be telling everyone what a terrible, ungrateful child I am. My read on this is not one with maximum generosity settings up.
I would agree with that.
So even allowing for, like, maybe it's possible that she has some reason to need to keep her distance from her ex-husband, I don't think that that really matters for this letter writer. I think the question is still, like, how do I essentially figure out what's the level of conflict I'm willing and able to have with my mom?
Yeah.
And do that.
Yes. I think that that is also what this letter writer is asking.
Yeah.
I do want to say that, like, if you wanted to, you could accept the gift and not say anything.
Oh, 100%.
Like, you can 100% not thank a gift giver for a gift you did not ask for.
Yeah. I think especially, too, because, like, you have been – you actually – the first line doesn't say I've been mostly estranged. It just says I've been estranged. I realize I added that, like, unconsciously. Because you've been basically, like, rolling out a soft estrangement for
yes.
6 years.
Yes.
And I think the question right now on your mind is, like, is it time to switch to, like, a hard estrangement where we don't send birthday cards and if she sends me stuff, I don't respond?
I mean, it's also just such a weird, like, you're not close to your mother, so I wouldn't expect her to know about the stressors in your life. But, like, a wine of the month gift is a terrible gift for somebody struggling with infertility. Because if you're trying to get pregnant, you're probably not drinking a bunch of wine.
Yeah, I think, yeah, there's a number of ways in which, like, the last time you talked was in the fall, I'm sorry, your father is dying, and then, like, 6 months later, here is an anonymous bottle of wine sent to you by a company that picks wine out every month. It's not, like, maybe she was trying, but it was not a great, a better attempt would have been an email saying, how are you doing?
I'm
thinking of you.
Is there anything you need?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, anyways, so I think your options are as follows. Like, one, if you just are like, you know what? I know if I try to engage her on this, we're just going to get roped into our old fighting. And I want permission to just say, yep, she's probably going to tell people I'm a terrible child. I don't really have the bandwidth to deal with that right now. I'm fine with her saying that to, like, her bridge club
right. It's members. It seems unlikely that they are people who are both in your life and your mother's life. Like, yeah. Whoever your mother would be talking trash to is probably not also, like, close to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it doesn't feel good to know that, like, somebody's saying something mean about you behind your back, but yeah. Also, like, those people are not in are likely not in your life.
Yeah. So I know you say that you don't want to ignore this. So, you know, if the idea of ignoring it feels really unbearable to you, certainly you don't have to. But if you just need permission to take one thing off your plate and just say, like, my mom might periodically send me, like, dumb, thoughtless stuff and I'm not going to tell her what I'm really thinking. I'm just going to keep it super light, super surface level and just say, like, thanks, mom, and then move on with my life.
Right.
Rather than thinking of that in terms of, like, oh, my mom thinks she's doing the right thing, you can think of it in terms of, like, my mom does not get to have access to what I'm really thinking because I can't trust her with, like, my actual needs and feelings because, you know, as evidenced by when you said, hey, my father is dying, and she was like, sorry to hear that, as if you were, like, distant former coworkers.
Right.
I think that that would be totally justified.
I think it would be totally justified. I think if you want to acknowledge... If you like, this is semantics, but if you don't want to thank your mother for anything, you could acknowledge the receipt of the gift without saying thank you. Like, you mm-hmm. could say something like, hey, mom, got the wine. Nice to know you were thinking of me
mm-hmm.
or something like that. And I know that that's that, like, that is really sort of parsing words, but
you sometimes would, that helps.
But sometimes it feels better.
Yeah. Other options, I think, include something like, Hey, Mom, I was a little confused. The last time we spoke, I told you that my father was dying, and then I got some wine from you in the mail today. Was that a mistake? Like, just in a way that makes it really clear how bizarre that is as a follow-up. Again, that might invite conflict. Your mom might throw a fit. You might not want to do that, but right. That is an option.
Yes.
You also, you know, I'll give this last option. You also just can write back and say, I'm really hurt that you haven't been able to be here for me when my dad is dying. I don't want you to send me wine gifts right now. I don't have the energy to talk to you right now. I need you to leave me alone. Again, that's also a higher conflict route. She might talk shit about you at the grocery store. She might write back something hurtful, but you don't have to worry about that. Like, you've already minimized your contact with her down to barely nothing. If you would like to take down that last 10%, because that last 10% of interactions still takes up like 50% of your emotional and mental energy on any given day, this might be the opportunity. So,
and if you do want to go one of the higher conflict routes, especially if you're sending an email, if she emails you back, you can choose not to read that email, put it in a folder unread, and check it later when you feel like you have more emotional bandwidth. Mm-hmm.
You could also ask maybe not your partner because you say you're going through marital stress right now, but maybe a good friend. And you can just say like, hey, I'm going through a lot right now. I can't even look at this email my mom sent me. Can you just look at it and kind of hold that for me? And, like, let me know if you think there's something in it I need to respond to, but basically just, like, be the keeper of mom conflict for right now. You don't have to do anything other than read it.
Right.
I think that might feel helpful to know that somebody else is in your corner.
Agreed.
But basically all of those options are available to you. I think you get to decide whether or not you want to argue with your mom about this, or whether you want to be honest with your mom about not wanting to talk to her, or just, you know, you can also just lie and say, thanks for the wine, Mom. And then go about your day. All of these are options that are open to you. I think any one of these, the question is really just what sounds best to you.
Yeah.
There are no options that I would say you don't get to pick that one.
No, all of those are definitely on the table.
Yeah. You can also lie and tell her that you just found out you're allergic to wine. You know what I mean? Like, you have my permission to kind of say anything you need to right now. And I'm really, really sorry. And I hope that you are able to figure out.
Also, you're not a terrible, ungrateful child.
No. Yeah. Hopefully you know that already. But just if part of you feels like if my mom says it, I have to give space to that.
You're
not. Don't.
Yeah. You don't.
Yeah.
She's wrong.
Your mom's response to stuff is not a good one.
No.
But that can be hard. You know, I mean, that feeling of like, I know she's a bad mom. I know that the estrangement is necessary, but there was always this little voice in the back of my head that says, like, someday when life gets really difficult, she's actually going to step up and be the mom I always wanted her to be. And you know that that's not true. And that's devastating.
It's super painful.
You know, like, it's one thing to kind of adjust your expectations with a parent, but there's, I think, for most of us, always a little voice in the back of the head that says, like, I need my parent right now, and they'll be here for me. And when they're not, it's still disappointing, even if you're used to it.
Right. Even if it's the 40th time you've lowered the bar, it's still really, really painful.
Yeah. So don't beat yourself up for wanting that or for hoping that or for feeling disappointed. Again, anything you want to say to your mom is kind of on the table, short of like going absolutely ballistic and like calling her names.
Yeah. But I think that, not acknowledging it in a surface level, or sort of acknowledging that she's hurt you and that this is a weird thing to do. Like, all of those are completely appropriate, and that I don't think that you will regret doing it in terms of like how you feel about yourself.
Yeah. You also like have my permission to throw it away, not acknowledge it. And if she ever asks, say, yeah, I thought it was really weird and ill-timed. I threw it out. I didn't appreciate it. Is also a fine thing for you to say.
Yeah, that's also like, totally fine.
Yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So, moving on to a very different kind of mom.
I mean, is it?
Well, it's hard because this letter writer is apparently normally very close to her mom.
It's so weird. Yeah.
Which, by the way, people often write I'm very close to someone and then describe a relationship where I don't think they're close so much as you give them what they want all the time.
Sure.
And
yeah,
that's, I worry.
I know.
I worry. Please read this.
Okay. Subject: Mom is unsupportive of my wedding. Dear Prudence, I'm getting married in 2 years. My fiancé and I are paying for our wedding ourselves, but we both make good money, combined around $300,000. My mom, with whom I am very close, just does not understand why we want to have a big wedding for $40,000. We have a lot of friends, and we've dreamed of throwing a huge party celebrating our love for years. All I'm asking of my mom is to show up to the wedding and have fun, but she insists on trying to change my mind anytime I bring the wedding up. She says it's a mockery of my parents' financial situation, they make less money than me, and that she has failed at raising me with any financial sensibilities. How do I get her to understand that my life is not her life and I just want her to be happy for me? So I had a couple thoughts about this. One is that you, like, this idea that she has raised you without any financial sensibilities is outrageous. You've made it into the upper echelons of earning potential. And there's absolutely no way that your wedding could be a mockery of your parents' financial situation unless you're secretly planning to, like, address the fact that they make less money than you do in your welcome speech at your wedding. Like, that's just not, like, no amount of money that if you threw a $100,000 wedding, like, there's no way that that could be a mockery of her, of your parents' financial situation. I do think it would be, like, you should throw this wedding for yourself. Like, but the only sort of conversation that I think would be worth broaching with her with this, because I think anytime she brings this up, you should just be like, I'm sorry you feel that way, but this is what we're doing. The only thing that might be worth addressing is not when she brings up how much the wedding costs, but go to her and say, hey, I've noticed that, like, every time the wedding comes up, you talk about how much it costs. And you have resistance to that. I'm wondering if there's anything else going on. Like, do you have feelings around this wedding that are not financially based? Like, I don't know what your birth order is. Are you her first kid getting married? Does she feel a sense of loss that you're getting married? So I think that might be a conversation worth having. But I think anything surrounding, like, how much money you're spending on your wedding, like, you can sort of stop engaging with her around that.
So I weirdly feel like I was a little surprised by my own response to this, because normally stuff like this I'm like, you know, shut it down. But I think there are probably ways in which it could be a mockery of their financial situation, or, like, maybe mockery is not a great word, but, like, if your parents are struggling to make ends meet and you have lots and lots and lots of money and you decide to throw a $40,000 wedding, again, without saying, like, they have the right to demand it of you or you are a monster or a jerk. And or even to say that, like, the way she's bringing it up is good, without saying any of those things, I could see ways in which it could feel challenging and painful. I don't know that. Like, based on this letter, it could be, like, the parents could make, you know, $150,000 a year and be perfectly comfortable and just be, like, kind of sour grapesing it. But I'm wondering, like, if your parents, like, need money. I guess what I would say is, if your mom and you are normally close and you normally think your mom has good judgment and this is coming up really unexpectedly, there may be an opportunity here to ask that question before you say, no matter what, you can't keep bringing it up like this. But to say, like, mom, do you need money? Are you okay?
I think that's I guess I just didn't read that into, because I think that there is an expectation that, like, parents will help pay for a wedding.
Sure.
And it sounds like they're planning on paying for this thing themselves.
Totally.
And so, I mean, I guess, like, that's possible. I think that's, that might be a question worth asking. But it just sounds like because she and her betrothed have mm-hmm. decided to pay for it themselves and they have the financial means to do so, that
totally.
That mom is maybe feeling, like, left out and, like, she can't. Yeah. And, like, it, and that it, and that there's not a role for her in it in terms of the finances.
For sure. And, like, I'm totally on board with you in terms of, like, you do need to talk to your mom.
Yes.
You absolutely get to say and need to say, like, you cannot keep doing this.
Yeah.
If you keep doing this, I will not have conversations with you about my wedding. If you keep doing this, I don't want you there.
Right.
I would love for you to be there. It would make me very sad if you decided you would not like to go.
Yeah.
But the like ball is in your court.
And I don't think we're there yet because it sounds like they're really close and it just sounds like it's an ongoing. I mean, and it's also it's 2 years away.
Yes.
So you definitely don't want to keep having this conversation for the next 2 years.
Right,
like
that's
going to erode the closeness that you have with your mother.
Yeah.
And it's going to it's not going to be good for anybody involved.
Yeah. And I think that would be the important thing to say, too. Like in this conversation, you say, like, Mom, we're normally really close. When I think about the next 2 years. If this happens every time we talk about the wedding, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
And that makes me really, really sad.
Right.
And I want to figure out another way to talk about it. And so part of this conversation, I think, can involve like, Mom, this isn't like you. You don't normally talk to me like this.
Which is why I wonder if there's something else going on besides the money.
Well, and that's why I wonder, like, do you need money?
Sure.
Like, have you guys been taking out loans and not telling me? Are you in more debt than you said? Like, is that why you're so upset about this? Because like, if so, I want to know. I would maybe want to be able to help.
Of course.
And again, I don't, you know, that doesn't make the way that she's been bringing it up okay. But again, if she's normally a good parent and this is kind of out of character, look for the opportunity to be helpful and to understand before you go to laying down the law.
Fair.
Yeah. But then, you know, if there's nothing going on behind that, if she's just like, I think it's a horrible idea to spend $40,000 on a wedding and no one should do it. I got married for $4.
Sure.
Everyone like brought their own sandwiches and
their own chairs.
Right. Yeah. I think at that point, it's going to be really okay to say, like, I get it. You don't have to like it or approve of it. But trust at this point, I am crystal clear on the fact that you don't approve.
Yeah.
That you would not want to spend any money like this on a wedding yourself. We are not asking anyone else to pay for it. We have the means. We are not going into debt for it. This is our decision. You need to let it go. Or, like, find a therapist you can talk to about this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there is a balance here to be struck between, like, first do a little investigating because it seems out of character.
I mean, it sounds like we both think that there's investigating worth doing and that there might be something behind it. Like, you went money. I went, like, losing a child.
Sure. Yeah, I just, I feel like I so often get the chance to tell people to, like, tell your parents, like, to shut up and stop. And so I always want to, like, if there's some good foundations
I definitely think that there's investigations worth doing.
Yeah. And I'm also, I'm not against helping family members out financially, especially if they have a
It's just such a weird, like, making a mockery.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, people get really intense about weddings and money, and you see it in both sides, like people who are like, I will like mortgage my children's future in order to pay for this, and also
I will
people,
cut off grandma if she doesn't give me $10,000 for the wedding,
and also people who get very like, if you don't get married in a backyard and have everyone bring their own thermoses, you're a monster, and there's never a good reason to want to spend a lot of money on like a single day, and I think there are ways to be too far to the extreme in either side, but
agreed.
Basically, I don't think anyone's ever convinced anyone to not spend money by like repeatedly saying you're making a mockery of my life. Like, that's just not an effective strategy. So the subject of the next letter is called Guilt from Mother. Let's focus on like dads or something next week.
It's just so many moms.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah. We just, it's a mom-heavy week, I guess.
It is. Yeah, that's fine. Moms are good.
And not these moms all the time. I mean, they're trying. They're human beings.
Totally. Everybody's doing the best they can.
Yeah. Subject is guilt for mother. Dear Prudence, my parents got divorced when I was young and my mom got the short end of the custody stick. For the past few months, I've been going to her house less and staying at my dad's longer. This is because the environment at my mom's is kind of terrible. My younger half-brother has hurt us in the past, mostly my mom, both verbally and physically. He has behavioral issues and goes to counseling and is acting better, but hasn't completely stopped. My mom doesn't help him with some of these problems and either makes him feel horribly guilty or just lets him bully her. What he does is unacceptable, but he's also still a child. I feel like I'm leaving them to deal with each other's BS. Also, I'm a trans man, and I came out to her a couple of years ago. She said she's accepting and that she loves me, but continues to call me by my dead name, former pronouns, and constantly tells me that we have to have, quote, girl time, which makes me feel like she's going out of her way to misgender me. She doesn't like the thought of me transitioning, but reluctantly said that once I'm 18, next year, she won't be able to stop me. She won't. During the holidays, she bought me another binder, which was a nice gesture, but also confusing considering how she treats me the rest of the time. There are other minor reasons as to why I don't go over there anymore. She's very overbearing and often makes me feel guilty for her not coming. But I can tell that she's truly hurt, especially because of the already limited custody time. I can't tell if she's doing this on purpose, hoping that I'll come back. Even when I suck it up and do small things like go out to lunch with her and my half-brother, it feels near intolerable. But I do love her, and I know she loves me. I know that if I told her all of this, it would break her heart. Should I spare her feelings and wait this out until college, or figure out a way to make this work the best I can? So there's a lot.
There's a lot.
Obviously. Do you think as this letter writer is considering his various options, both short and long term, that there's like a particular principle that he should bear in mind, or like a kind of list of priorities that should come first?
I mean, I think sort of protecting himself physically and emotionally is probably the highest order of business. I would agree that it does sound like your mother is going out of her way to misgender you. I'm also, like, I'm really concerned about the your younger sibling who hurts you and your mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder sort of, like, what support there is there. But that's not – but with absent extra support for that
mm-hmm. –
I do think that it makes a lot of sense for you to spend less time at your mother's.
Yeah.
Right? Even if your mother were handling your transition flawlessly.
Right.
Spending time in a home with somebody who hurts you it's not safe there.
It's not safe for you, and I don't think it would actually help your mother.
For him to spend more time there?
If you were going there because you were like, I worry that I'm leaving her alone, she is his parent. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
You can't moderate somebody else's, I hesitate to say, like, he's abusing her because he's a child. It's unclear to me how old
right.
he is or how
again,
culpable
I'm
he is
also
for his
not
actions.
Clear.
But, like, for the purpose of this particular conversation,
yes.
you can't, like, draw off or absorb physical or verbal abuse from him such that she's going to like
so that you protect your mother.
The solution is that your mom needs to get more support.
Yes.
In dealing with his like physical and verbal acting out.
Yes.
So please, as hard as it can be to not say like, it's my fault, I should go over there more, I should act as a buffer for her. You would not actually be helping her by putting yourself in harm's way.
Or yourself or your younger sibling.
Yeah. So to that end, do you think that the letter writer should, like, do you think his dad is aware of, like, how bad things are over at that house? Like,
I don't know. It's unclear. I mean, I think definitely enlisting help
yeah.
is a good plan, whether yeah. it's dad, whether it's a friend, whether it's a counselor, whether it's all of those people.
Yeah.
Like, the situation at your mother's house sounds pretty untenable.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think... I hope you can talk to your dad. I hope you can, like, maybe ask to see a therapist for a little while. But to say, I think, essentially, I'm not physically safe at mom's house. So I won't go over there anymore.
Yeah.
If we have to revisit the custody agreement, it's not that I don't want to have any contact with mom, but, like, that needs to be a hard limit for me
yes.
in terms of my safety. That's okay for you to say. It's okay for you to name. It's only your job as like a teenager to name ways in which
you
adults in your life
need
to look out for you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I know that there's a part of you that feels like that's just going to make things harder for my mom. She's already overwhelmed. And I just want to say to you that like she is the adult here. It is her job to figure out if she doesn't already have the support she needs to keep her kids safe.
How to get it. And she shouldn't get it from you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you need to say that to your dad, to a school counselor. To a teacher that you trust, to an adult that you trust, to somebody. But that needs to be clear, and that's okay for you to say. And again, you're not saying my half-brother is a monster and an irredeemable person
no.
and you're a bad mom. You're just saying, I can't do this anymore.
Right. You're just naming what's going on and saying that you can't do it.
Right. So if you're worried about that, if someone tries to guilt you into not naming reality by claiming that's what you're doing, I just want you to be able to say, I'm not saying any of those things.
Right.
All I'm saying is that historically I've not been physically safe at mom's house.
Yeah.
And things need to change.
Yeah.
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 And that might make your mom sad. And I'm so sorry because it's hard not to feel responsible for your parents' feelings.
Of course.
But that's just not... you, that's not your fault.
Right.
It's just
and she
not.
Can be sad.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay if she's sad about that.
Yeah. Again, she's got other people in her life, up to and including doctors, therapists, and friends that she can and needs to turn to, and not to her kids to help her fix this.
Yes.
So I think for you, frankly, too, just like getting to see a therapist who can help you figure out ways in which you are not responsible for your mom's happiness or unhappiness is going to be really important.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I think especially given that your mom has a history of being overbearing and trying to guilt you into doing things that you don't want to do, a therapist is just going to be helpful for you long term, because like going to college will be helpful. You'll get a little space and distance, but you're still going to have to figure out what kind of relationship you want to and are able to have with your mom for the rest of your life. So this isn't just going to go away. Like,
right.
Now even, I'm at college,
even
I'm
if,
safe.
Right. And even if she, like, even if the situation at your mother's house is fixed, like she's still going to be
the same person.
She's still going to be the same person. So you're going to need to navigate that and boundaries and what you are like, what you want and need from her and what you are and aren't willing to put up with from her.
Yeah. And so I think, those are the kind of priorities right now.
Yeah.
In addition to any of the kind of conversations that you have with your mom around transition, I would say that's really up to you. If you want to kind of just like keep her a little bit at arm's length right now so you can kind of focus on just like finishing high school, figuring out where you want to go to college, dealing with your half brother, that's fine. If you also want to start saying to your mom, like, I understand that you may have a tough time letting go of certain hopes or expectations you had for a daughter. I can't help you with that. As a child and also as your son, I am uniquely unqualified to help you mourn the loss of whatever dreams you might have had around that.
Yeah.
You need to find either a therapist or a friend to share that with.
Yes.
I can't help you with that. I cannot give you girl time.
Correct. I am incapable of doing girl time.
So, you know, I appreciate the like gift of the binder. I would much rather than you like buying me clothes, just listen, give me a little bit of space here.
Use correct pronouns.
Maybe try to like call me by my name.
Yeah.
And even just to stress, like, it's not that like transition is something I'm going to be able to start doing when I'm 18. It's something that's already going on.
It's already happening. Yeah.
And you have the option of either participating with me in this or in creating a bubble where you have a fictional version of me that you can, you know, have less and less control over with time. So those are your two options. There's not an option where you actually get to, like, postpone my transition. You just don't get to know me as well.
Right. That's really beautifully said.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, your options are not postpone or call off my transition. Your options are, like, get to know me for who I am, or, you know, have a lot of loud conversations on your phone about your imaginary daughter to your friends. And I, you know, I don't want you to have to develop a fantasy relationship when you have a kid right here.
Yeah.
But again, that feels a little, that's going to come more with time. It's a little less pressing than issues of physical safety. I'm really glad that in the meantime, you're able to stay with your dad.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm very glad that you have a safe space to stay.
Yeah. But I would just say mostly, like, if your mom's heart is broken, as sad as that is, and as much as her feelings matter, you cannot mend your mother's broken heart. If your mother's heart is broken by you saying, I can't be in a house where I know that my brother might attack me, your mother's heart is broken by the wrong things. And she needs to, as I sometimes say on the show, radically reorient her heart.
I love that.
Thanks.
I'm so glad we got to get that in.
I am too. All right. It's me, right?
It's
my turn?
It is you.
Okay. So, at least this one is like the mom is writing to us, you know?
Sure.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's a twist, right? It's slightly different from all the other ones
it's
that we've been getting.
It's still like family members behaving badly, though.
Yeah. I'm trying to look for a silver lining here, Sarah.
I will permit you no silver linings.
Fair enough. All right. Here we go. So the subject is new relationship. But not like good and fun new.
I mean, the relationship sounds great.
The problem is the old relationship.
Yeah, the new relationship sounds pretty great.
All right, here we go. Dear Prudence, my ex ruined our marriage with repeated affairs. I left after his last affair partner claimed to be pregnant, and my ex decided that I needed to be a stepmother to this child during one of our counseling sessions. The pregnancy didn't pan out. We have been divorced for 2 years and have 3 children, 12, 9, and 7. I'd basically given up on men until I met Dan. He is a widower with a 9-year-old daughter. He's good, solid, and kind. We've seen each other quietly for about 5 months and have just mentioned our relationship to the kids. They were happy until my youngest let it slip to her father. He reacted badly. I, quote, don't know what I'm doing, and I'm trying to replace him with the kids. He's been passive-aggressively trying to turn the kids against Dan and me. My kids are acting up and acting out. My youngest has tantrums if I go out, and my oldest refuses to talk to her father because, quote, he just wants to hurt you, Mom. My ex wants to use that as evidence that I am poisoning the kids against him. We ended up having a screaming match over the phone where I told him I could have poisoned the kids at any time by telling them the truth about what he did. My ex had affairs with multiple mutual acquaintances. I had to switch my daughter to a different dance studio. I told him that I would turn the kids against him if he didn't stop trying to screw up my future like he did our marriage. The threat worked, but our co-parenting relationship is at a nadir. Nadir?
Nadir. I think it's nadir.
I have no idea how you say that word. It's at an all-time low is what it's at.
Yes, it is.
It's badly affecting the kids. I am sick with worry and rage. I don't want to be this person. Dan has been my rock through all of this, but I don't know if I'm doing the right thing by pursuing this relationship. I don't want to be alone for the next 10 to 12 years until the kids are adults. Holy smokes.
So I had a couple of thoughts while reading this.
Yeah?
My first thought was that this person sounds like a really good mom. Yeah. My first thought was that this person sounds like a really good mom. She is full of, what'd she say, worry and rage, but she has not, she has done the good mom thing of, like, not telling her kids, like, well, I left your father because he was sleeping with everybody, including the person who runs your dance studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not information the kids need to have.
No.
Especially not at 7, 9, and 12.
No, and she, right, so she did not tell the kids. It sounds like she threatened her husband with it or her ex-husband with it, but she did not actually tell her children. And she's also considering ending this relationship so that her, like, because she thinks it will make her children happier if she ends the relationship, which is, like, very, I don't know. She's really taking her children's needs to heart and in mind when she's trying to, like, contemplate what her next correct steps are.
Yeah.
I would say it's not unusual for a 7-year-old to act out after their parents get divorced.
Yeah.
It may or may not have anything to do with the new relationship. Even if it does, that means you don't have to, like, doesn't mean you have to end it.
Right.
This was going to be a tough time no matter what.
Yeah.
The question is about the relationship.
Yes.
And whether or not she should leave Dan.
Yeah.
I don't think she should leave Dan.
Yeah.
It sounds like Dan is a really positive force in their lives.
I almost read this less as, like, should I quit seeing Dan, so much as, like, that felt like I'm not going to try to leave Dan. I'm worried Dan's going to leave me. And kind of the implicit question I
but
felt
she
like.
She says, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing by pursuing this relationship, which makes it sound to me like she is maybe contemplating no longer pursuing this relationship.
Yeah.
And I want to come down really hard on the side of, like, you have said, like, there's nothing in this letter that suggests to me that Dan is problematic or has not or has been anything other than supportive and good.
Right.
Like, to me, I read this as the question of, like, is this an okay, like, is it okay for me to pursue this relationship? I don't want to be alone for the next 10 or 12 years until the kids are adults. I think it's totally fine for you to continue to be in a relationship with Dan.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like your ex is using Dan as an excuse to, like, sort of blow up your co-parenting. And I think that that's sort of going to be the harder thing to navigate. But I definitely think you can navigate it while also being in a relationship with this person.
Right. And I'll just say, too, like, I don't know if things are going to work out long-term with Dan.
Sure.
And so I would say I totally understand that fear of, like, am I going to be alone for 10 or 12 years until the kids are all adults? I don't know. I would love to say, like, no, you're a great lady. Your husband, your ex-husband put you through so much. You deserve, like, a Nicholas Sparks-style ending where, like, a guy builds you a boat for 40 years. I don't know that that's going to – like, it may very well be that – you love Dan. Dan loves you. You guys try as hard as you can. And your current situation is just, like, too hard.
Sure.
I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But if it does, you know, you can't guarantee that that won't, basically, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Sure.
So I would say certainly keep dating Dan.
Yes.
A couple of things that I think are going to be the next right thing. Number one, find a family therapist for your kids.
Yes.
You know, like, that would be good no matter what, but especially if your kid is melting down every time you leave the house, presumably even if you're just going to, like, not see Dan, but like to see a friend or, or run an errand without your kid. Like, your kid needs a little extra help right now.
Yes. Which would be true regardless of whether or not Dan were in the picture.
Right, right. So I would say it's therapy for the kids.
Yes.
And therapy for you.
And therapy for you. It sounds unlikely that your ex would go with you. If your ex would be willing to go with you, couples counseling to figure out co-parenting is one of the highest and best uses of therapy.
Right. And I think as awful as the ex-husband sounds, I don't think he would fall in the category of like an active abuser, which is kind of like the one circumstance in which you don't want to recommend.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he sounds like a serial philanderer, but there's nothing in here about him being unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if he doesn't go, fine.
Yeah.
You don't need
him. Should still go.
And maybe, I think, also, if you guys can find a mediator. Or some way of revisiting your custody agreement that's not about like being punitive or trying to take the kids away, but just about like, hey, what's happening right now isn't working.
Yeah.
Ex-husband, like, you need to find a way to deal with these feelings that do not involve upsetting the kids.
Yes.
Can we both agree that our goal is not to upset the kids?
Yes.
And if so, how can we accomplish that best?
Yes. If you feel like it, you can walk back your threat.
Yeah.
Like, if you feel like you're in a place to, like, while you're speaking with him about your co-parenting relationship, walk back and be like, I'm not, like, I would not tell the children about why our marriage crumbled. Their children, they don't need to know that. I said that because I was angry. Can we please, like, move past that, move forward, and find a way to be the best co-parents we can be?
And you can say that in a way that's not, like, apologizing for either. Like, I like the way that you just framed it, because it's not like, hey, we both said some things we didn't mean and we're both equally culpable. You do not really need to apologize to him. But just to make it clear, like, look, I got really heated the last time we spoke. I think not without provocation.
Sure.
But I don't want to go to that every time that we fight.
Right.
I am committed to keeping the kids feeling as stable and as safe as they can be.
Yes.
And they can't feel that way if I tell them that you were screwing their dance teachers.
Right, yeah.
So that's why I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Can you and I agree on that?
Yes.
And just making that, you know, because that also makes it clear. It's like, oh, I'm not doing this for you. Like,
right.
You're not.
No. This is about the children.
Yeah.
And again, she sounds like a really good mom.
Yeah. So, but I want you to be able to see a therapist too, because I want you to be able to find a balance between like trying to be like taking the high road for the sake of your kids.
Yes.
Versus like just feeling like I have to swallow whatever crazy shit my ex does, because it's my job to be the sane one.
Yes.
Because that's going to put you in a position where you more often periodically like melt down and scream at him. I will poison the kids against you, because you need an outlet for your anger against him.
Yes.
You can't.
Yeah. And like a place to workshop ways to say the angry things in a way that's productive.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, because you can say the angry things in a productive way. They just take some working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like with your oldest kid who's 12, who doesn't want to talk to their dad. You know, again, hopefully a therapist will be able to be helpful with that. But I would just say don't try to force that. Make it clear to your kid, like, whatever your relationship with your dad is going to be throughout the course of your life, I don't want you to feel like you have to defend me against him.
Right. Like, you don't have to pick a side.
Yep.
You can feel about how your dad, how you feel.
Yep.
But you don't have to feel about him anyway on my behalf.
Yeah. Let me just reassure you, like, I've got my therapist. I've got my friends.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I need to do to take care of myself. You do not have to pick sides.
Yeah.
You don't have to like stuff that your dad does or says, but I just need you to know I'm okay.
Yes.
And I want you to be able to have the best possible relationship that you can with your dad. Again, that's yours. That's your call to make.
Right.
If you need space from him, I'm never going to force you to you know, do something that you don't feel okay with. But if sometimes you guys have visitations and I don't know. I feel like actually now I'm overstepping my bounds. We're like, I don't know what you can or can't say to your kid about the custody agreement.
Yeah. I mean,
But basically, I think just to stress
because, I mean, you can definitely make your kid go spend the weekend at their dad's house, even if they don't want to.
Yeah.
Definitely happened to me.
And, and like, as your kid gets older, that may change.
Sure.
But I think to make it clear that
you are loved by both parents. You do not have to pick a parent. Yep. You can feel about your parents how you feel during this time when everything's in sort of turmoil and everybody's upset.
Yeah. So those are, I think those are all the main priorities. Then after that's all been addressed, you know, you can continue to let Dan know, like, things are often hectic. As you know, I have a very difficult ex. To whatever extent you can make, like, your time with Dan a little bit of an oasis from that.
Yeah. It sounds like he's done a good job, right? She says Dan's been her rock.
Yeah.
So that's great.
That's great.
He sounds really solid.
He sounds wonderful. And, you know, I hope you two are able to also spend time together that's not given over to, like, walking through the messiness of your ongoing custody agreement.
Which, again, a therapist will be helpful for, because, like, the more sort of spread out the people you have to process with, the more time you can enjoy the time that you have with your loved ones without having to process things.
Yeah. But you, there's nothing right now that makes me think you need to end things with Dan right now. It's not working out.
No, me neither.
And I'm sorry. And I hope that your ex grows up.
Likewise. He doesn't. I mean, I don't have a lot of hope for that.
What a damn dog in a manger.
But, like, miracles happen. Maybe he will. Mm.
All right. Oh, boy.
Yeah, this one's yours.
This one's way worse.
It's all so bad.
This one is a hammer.
Oh, but I have my favorite, like, coping strategy that I'm going to offer to this letter writer.
Okay.
And one of my favorite coping strategies.
I went really long in the last one, so I'm going to, like, let you basically handle this one.
Oh, but I wanted to go on a rant about the last one. Whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
I'll do both.
Okay, great. Yeah. Subject is being so brave. Dear Prudence, I recently found out that my boyfriend of 3 years was cheating on me with his brother's wife. We tried to work it out, but in the end, he couldn't give her up, and I wanted to break up with him. He killed himself before I could leave him. Now it feels like he didn't just cheat on me. He cheated me out of being able to be angry with him. How can you be angry at a dead man? I didn't tell anyone what he'd done because I didn't want to destroy his brother's marriage or let my mother know that she'd been right about him. So now I've got no one in my life to let the bitter, angry pus out of the wound with. The only thing that cheers me up right now is a sort of bleak amusement at the fact that his sister-in-law can't be honest about her grief either, which is pretty twisted. Therapy is the long-term answer, obviously, but do you have any tips on how to get through the next few weeks? Sometimes I feel like I just want to scream, he was a cheating asshole, at the next person to tell me I'm being brave, but his mother probably wouldn't appreciate that. Besides, as angry as I am with him, he wasn't just a cheating asshole, and it feels unfair to leave that as the last taste in anyone's mouth about him, not when he can't make up for it to other people. Plus, I loved him for a long time. One day, when I can let myself be sad about this, the bitter, angry rants about him being an asshole probably won't feel as good as I imagine right now.
So I feel this is a mess, and I'm so sorry. And I'm so, like, I know that you're saying, like, your subject title is being so brave, ! Facetiously, but you are holding it together remarkably well.
Yeah.
That you have not gone off on this bitter, angry rant, and that you recognize that, like, that won't feel good once sort of the pain of this has, once the pain and rage of this has passed. So you are being very brave, even if you are angry with him. And it's totally fine to be angry with somebody who's dead and who can't defend themselves to you. Like, that's fine. You can totally be angry with him. I do hope that, like, and I hope that when you say tips to get through the next few weeks, that means you have set up an appointment with a therapist in a few weeks.
My read on that was, like, basically getting through the funeral, getting on the other side of, like, a lot of people having to talk to you about it.
Oh.
But yeah, it could probably also be a therapy setup.
Either way, it sounds like therapy is on your list of things to do, which is really, like, you, like, I want that for you.
Yeah.
I also hope that you do have, like, somebody in your life that you can talk to about how angry this is and how painful and complicated this is. Besides a therapist, besides a family member, if you don't want to talk to a family member. I think, like, I can't tell what your relationship is with your mother. You say you don't want her to know that she'd been right about him. But I hope you have somebody that you're close with that you can, like, express your full range of feelings about this man that you loved, that treated you badly in a lot of ways, and who died really tragically. I do want to put in a plug for throwing ice at shower walls, because it feels like you're breaking plates, but there's no cleanup.
See, this is why we need nurses on the show. That is genius advice.
Yeah, like, it's really satisfying, but you don't actually break anything. And it's like it breaks apart like glass, and it's very satisfying. So if you feel yourself consumed by rage and you want to throw plates, you could also throw plates. But a cheaper, less cleanup-y way to throw plates is to throw ice at shower walls. Shower walls, because they echo, you could throw it at the pavement too.
Yeah. And I think too, just to add to that, one of the things that you have right now is a lot of social freedom. Like, people understand if you have just lost your partner to suicide that you might not be up to going out or talking about it.
Yes.
So you have a lot of leeway, I think, here to say to friends and loved ones, I'm not able to discuss him at all right now.
Yes, absolutely.
If you want to know how you can support me, talk to me about anything else.
Anything else. Yeah. And yeah, and ask for things, mm-hmm. right? If you want space, ask for space. If you want someone to feed you, ask them to feed you. Like, if you want to go for a walk, ask somebody to go for a walk. Like,
right.
like ask for the things that you need right now from the people who care about you.
Yeah. And ask them to, like, spread the word for you, especially among yes. your friends. Like, yeah. say, like, I have plans to get to therapy. I'm not just going to, like, deny this for the rest of my life. What I need right now is to not discuss this.
Yeah.
And if you can tell as many people as possible, that would be the hugest help to me. Because, yeah. again, people often want to know, what can I do?
Yes.
And this will help save you a number of conversations.
Yes. And you do sound sort of remarkably in touch with, like, your inner self.
Yeah.
And it just... It just sounds so painful.
Yeah. And I think that with time, if you do decide you want to share some version of this, either with one or two close friends or even a relative, that you may want to do that. You don't have to right now. I think it's wise of you to say, like, I just don't trust any of us right now to talk about it. But, you know, if a couple of years from now, I don't imagine that you're going to stay in very close touch with his mother.
Sure.
And you know, you're not going to, I imagine you're not going to be spending a lot of time with that sister-in-law of his.
No.
So if you decide, you know, a year or two from now, you've been in therapy, you want to share with a close friend who you trust, who you know doesn't see your former boyfriend's family, I need to talk to you about something really complicated that was going on. You may choose to do that, and that will be okay. You don't have to just, like, it's only you and a therapist for the rest of your life.
Sure.
But you already know, like, you're aware the anger sometimes fluctuates.
Right.
There are times when you feel like this is all I can think about. And there are also times when you're very aware, like, he was a complicated person. There were things about him and our relationship that I deeply loved. You're already able to hold all of these, like, various competing truths. And I think that that's, you know, that's just reality.
You could also write things down,
mm-hmm.
Like journaling, or like writing letters that you like either don't send or write and then burn, like whatever would feel sort of most cathartic to you,
yeah.
You know, to him, or just journaling in general. Like, I do think that writing things down can sometimes be a way to, like, let out some, what did you call it? Bitter, angry pus. I love that.
Yeah.
I think that that can sometimes be helpful in, like, doing, like, small amounts of pus letting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that too. Again, I feel like this letter writer, one of the things you have going for you is you're able to hold multiple competing truths at the same time.
Yeah.
And you're just really in touch with, like, what your pain feels like.
Yeah.
And being able to name that sort of thing and describe it is going to serve you really well. And I don't want to just sound like, you're going to be great. This is going to be fine. You'll
horrible.
Go to therapy for six
it's
months and feel great.
Situation.
But, yeah.
But I do think that you have, like, all of the tools to get through it.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's really great to write some of this down and to write down stuff and keep it in a really confidential place where you know
sure.
someone's not going to come across it. But write down the worst things that you're thinking and feeling.
Yeah.
Write down the just awful stuff that you feel like, I can't tell anyone about this, or this is not fair to him. Like, write without judgment of what you're writing, because
yes.
you're not saying, I'm going to publish this for other people to see,
or
this is the final truth of who he was as a human being. You are just writing down your feelings.
Right.
And that is something that you are allowed to do, and you don't have to worry about, am I being fair to his memory
right.
by writing something angry.
So the bitter, angry rant that you don't want to do at a person, feel absolutely free to write that down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keep us posted.
Please.
Please write back in, like, 3 months or 6 months or a year and just let us know, has therapy been helpful?
I want to know how you're doing.
Has writing stuff down been helpful? Have you been able to share it with anyone else in a way where you feel safe and like they're going to be able to help you keep it confidential? How you doing?
Yeah.
We are rooting for you. And I'm
so
just
much.
So sorry. That's so much to go through. And also just... I so understand that sort of, like, bleak amusement of, like, I have this connection to this other person I don't want
to
have.
Yes, I wanted to
but
say.
But at least we're in the same boat.
It's, like, maybe slightly twisted, but please don't beat yourself up about that. Like, I mean, it's not, like, it makes complete sense.
It's a twisted situation.
Like, misery loves company is a saying for a reason.
Yeah.
And I totally relate to that.
Yeah, I really do. So this last one.
I know.
We were actually emailing about
this. I know.
Last night.
I have so I'm so worried.
I am too.
I'm so worried.
I am
Danny.
Too. And I think this letter writer is not coming at it from the right perspective.
I mean, it's the wrong question.
Yeah.
I don't want to come down too harshly, but I do think it's the wrong question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the wrong question because sometimes if you see something getting worse slowly over time,
like,
you have a hard time.
No, I mean, I have, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a lot of feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there.
I have a lot of feelings.
So the subject here is friendship versus filth. Dear Prudence, every so often I visit a dear friend of mine who lives about 50 minutes away. We typically hang out at her home, which is oftentimes in a state of squalor. There's a foul odor reminiscent of animal feces. Her floors and furniture are covered with miscellaneous items. There's rotting food left out in the open. Last time I visited, there were about a dozen used menstrual pads littering her bathroom floor. She works two jobs, is a single mother, and also struggles with mental health issues, so I understand that cleaning may not be a priority. But I am at the point where I truly cannot fathom going to her home again. The last two times I was there, I got sick, once with a stomach virus and most recently with a sinus infection. Her visiting me is not an option, as I live in a city and she dislikes driving in city traffic. How can I maintain our friendship and my health?
Yeah, so... as I said, I think it's the wrong question, because, used menstrual pads on the floor, rotting food, animal feces are not, are like pretty far past like cleaning not being a priority.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like this person is in like some degree of crisis.
Yes.
Which may be... Like, it's unclear to me, like, how long the crisis has been going on for.
Yeah, yeah.
But certainly, like, this person is struggling a lot. So, like, the question that it sounds like you're asking is how can you maintain your friendship and your health, which is, like, a fairly easy answer. Like, you would go meet, you don't want to go into this person's home again.
Right.
Right. So
but you don't just leave it at that.
But the answer to that, the answer to that question, the question that you're asking is fairly easy. Like, you meet at a neutral place. You go to a coffee shop. You go to a park. We go for a walk, whatever. But it's the wrong question to be asking.
Yeah.
And I understand why you would like that would be the question, because to go into a space like that, I can imagine that it feels like so big and like despair permeates that space and you when you're in it, so you don't want to go into it.
Right.
But I think that the correct question would be like, how can I maintain our friendship and how can I help my friend?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a harder question to answer.
Yes.
Than how do I not go into my friend's house?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what sort of city you live in. I don't know what everybody's financial resources are. But I think sort of figuring out what sort of resources are available to this person would be a place to start, because if you're at a place where you can't keep sort of rot and bodily fluids out of your house, you need to call in the cavalry.
Yeah. One thing that you had mentioned in our emails was that you didn't think that the letter writer had actually gotten sick from the house.
It's really unlikely that they got a sinus infection from being in that home.
Okay.
It's just because like it's viral.
Yeah.
If you touched something in your friend's house, you could have gotten some, what was the other one? A stomach thing,
mm-hmm.
a stomach thing. In theory, you could pick up a stomach thing from something like that, like bacteria living in the house.
Yeah.
But it's unlikely. I don't know how unlikely it is. The sinus infection feels very unlikely to me that you would get a sinus infection from that home. A stomach thing you could have. But there's another person and a child living in that house.
24/7.
24/7.
So that a more so if pressing
you right.
Risk.
So if you think that you're getting sick from that house, which may or may not be accurate, but you believe you're getting sick from that house, then there are people who live in those conditions 24/7, and the likelihood that if it's getting you sick, it's also getting them sick.
Right.
And I would be very concerned about that.
Right. So my thought here is the first person you talk to about this is your friend.
Yes.
Even if you believe she's having a mental health crisis that's not being adequately addressed right now.
Yes.
I think you need to have the conversation with her first.
Yes.
Of like, I haven't known how to bring this up because I've been, I haven't wanted to make you feel bad, and I
right.
want to make it
I love
really
you, and I don't want to judge you.
But your house is so distressing.
Yes.
It's not, it's, I don't believe that you and your kids are safe there right now. And I want to help.
Yes.
And so you, I think again, in terms of options, like, again, depending on the size of your city, you could offer to pay for a cleaning service. And at that point, I would say, look up specifically cleaning services that deal with biohazards.
Basically hazmat
and cleaning. Medical waste.
Yes.
Because you don't want to just call some like local cleaning company where they're right. like, we have, you know, a handful of cleaning products and we're used to like, you know, scrubbing dirty floors
yes.
and say like, hey, we're sending you in to like mold and yes. used pads. Like this yes. needs to be people who are
used to dealing with that and who get paid.
Have the tools and adequate compensation.
Yes. Yes.
And really, I mean, push that.
Yes.
If she is super resistant.
That's the thing that I was thinking of when I said I don't know what people's financial resources are. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if the letter writer is in a position to offer that. But
right.
I think if they are in a position to offer that, even if, or like, I don't know, like have a bake sale. I mean, not a bake sale, but like, I don't know if you know any of this woman's other friends,
yeah.
but like, I really think like she really needs a lot of.
This is not a stage of, again, you want to go about it in a way that's not like broadcasting to everyone. Like our friend lives in filth, but it's past like, I need to keep this a secret for her.
Yes.
And you know, if she is like.
And that's another thing that you could bring up with her when you speak to her. If you don't know any of her other friends, if you don't know who her other support is, you could ask her. You could be like, I'm concerned. I want to do this. Is there anybody else that I can sort of enlist in like helping sort of try and get things more manageable?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, again, depending on how that goes, if she's like. If it's hard for her, but she's receptive, again, just really stress how much you love her and
yeah.
just like.
And I can tell that you care about her because in you, the last line of your letter, like you've gone
yeah.
to this house that fills you with despair
right.
at least twice.
Right.
So you clearly care enough about her to brave that. And then you also in your letter, in the last line of your letter, you recognize that like she's not going to come to you because
yeah.
she doesn't like driving in a city
right.
and you still want to maintain that connection with her. So I do want to acknowledge that like I can tell that you really do care about this
right.
person.
Right. But this is
and
not...
I know it can feel really overwhelming when somebody that you care about is in like sort of like a really dark place and
right.
it can be hard to acknowledge like exactly how dark it is.
Right.
Right. Because you wrote out these things, but I think without sort of having the like emotional connection to like what that actually means.
Right. And then I would say, so depending on how that goes, that might be the first step.
Yeah.
And then also just saying like, I'm really worried about you. I want you to see a doctor about
yes.
how you're doing.
Yes.
I want to know how I want to make sure your kids are going to the doctor.
Yeah.
And again, like, I don't often recommend this, but it may be, depending on how those conversations go, necessary for you to ask for a wellness check.
Yes.
Because if the kids are being fed spoiled food.
Right. It's unclear to me how old the child is. Right. It says single mom, so
yeah.
there's no indication of how old the kid is.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea. And again, you, letter writer, will know better. Like,
yes.
if you know, like, actually the kid mostly is at daycare with a relative and in a super safe place,
right.
maybe that's not going to be a priority. Maybe
right.
you're going to stick more to finding the right kind of cleaning service
right.
And encouraging her to go to a doctor.
But I would say that if the child is in this environment a lot of the time,
yeah.
like, the kid needs to be protected.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's good to say that to your friend first.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying call the state right now before
yeah.
you talk to your friend.
And again, like you could maybe call like the local non-emergency health line and kind of say, if I see this kind of a situation, what options are there available?
Yeah.
Are there ways that the city can help? Are there ways in which she can like access more resources?
Yeah. And in larger cities, again, I don't know where you are in larger cities, some larger cities have like specific mental health sort of teams
yeah.
that can go out and like address something like this. And like they don't go in with cops. They
yeah.
go in with like nurses and counselors
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Because that you really want to stress. You don't want like the cops showing up at
no,
her door.
No, I don't want
night.
The cops.
Yeah.
I don't think the cops will be useful here at all.
No.
I don't think this is.
And the letter writer does say that they live in a city. So that does make me think, you know, she doesn't like driving in city traffic. I live in a city, so she doesn't visit me. So,
it sounds like odds are
good that there's going to be some resources.
Well, it sounds like the letter writer lives in the city, but.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But the
I was just thinking, like maybe close enough.
Sure,
that
sure, 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 sure. Yeah, I mean it's often by county,
yeah.
so but
yeah.
Regardless, like I do think it's worth going on the whatever county your friend lives in, going on the city website and seeing what resources
yeah.
there are available.
So the question is not how do we maintain an otherwise normal friendship like we have. I just don't
without
go over
going
her
into
house,
her house, yeah.
especially given that there's kids and you think that she's got mental health needs that aren't being addressed.
Yeah,
this needs to.
I mean, it doesn't say that she doesn't think they're being addressed, but we think they're not being addressed.
It's unclear. It doesn't sound like the mental health issues are like she has an amazing like therapist that she's got health insurance and is being like supervised by a doctor. So I just think your friend needs a lot of help right now. And now is the time to like call in her circle and say she needs help and we need to do what we can. And whether that's all we chip in to have the house regularly like deep cleaned.
Yeah.
Whether that's we like.
Because once it's cleaned, once it's easier to maintain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even if that means like periodically like all chipping in to make sure someone's doing it, if that's the help she needs because she's not able to do that and work two jobs and deal with some sort of mental health diagnosis.
Oh God, I forgot about the two jobs.
Yeah.
So much.
I'm sure it's a combination of both just whatever issue she has. And then also there's just not a lot of time in the day.
Yeah.
And do what you can. Do what you can as a collective to support this friend of yours and to help her in whatever way that you can so that if there are like county or state level interventions, it's not just her versus the state.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry.
Me too.
Yeah. That's really hard.
Yeah.
Well, I am just about ready to like play cards for a couple of hours.
Yeah. You want to go play Uno?
Yeah, actually.
All right, let's do it.
I would love that. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Being so wise.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton, and production assistance is by Taylor Simmons. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/Dear Prudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/PrudyPod to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops. Thanks for listening. And on today's Plus segment, I hope this is not what happens, but if your fiancé does any of the following, like says, I don't believe you, or encourages you to like get over it, then this is good information to have before you marry him.
That is a red flag, the reddest of flags.
Yeah, that is a sign that this is not a person who is in your corner or will fight for you when you need support. To listen to the rest of that conversation, join Slate Plus now at slate.com/PrudyPod.